The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with the assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the What Do You Do podcast with Kath B. But first, whatever comes out of my head.
Right up until not that long ago, you know the saying, as slow as a wet week, like someone in the car in front of me just was. I thought for years and years and years, I've just taken that to mean slow as a wet, weak person, W-E-A-K. I've never really thought of it. And then not that many, you know, not that long ago, I thought, oh, weak, W-E-E-K, slow as a wet, rainy, miserable week. That makes sense now. What are some sayings or something that you've always thought were one thing, but were actually another?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
Today, I'm talking with Susie, and I met Susie at a quiz night. And I have to say that we had a few quiz nights, and during those quiz nights, I learned a little bit about you each time. And because you were really good at geography, and because I kept hearing things about aeroplanes, I made the worst assumption of all and thought that you were a flight attendant.
Yeah, pretty standard.
So, Susie, what do you or did you do?
Yeah, I was an airline pilot.
I just find that fascinating. And so when you say standard about people making assumptions, what do you think, why do you think that is?
I don't think people see females in as pilots, even though women have been flying since aircraft were invented, even before there were balloon female pilots.
Wow. But,
yeah, so women have been in the air as long as men.
Back in the day, like when you started out, you know, you're a similar age to me. So how was it when it could have been a male-dominated job, career?
I had no concept of being the first female in the various airlines I joined. I was just doing a job. So looking back, I can see some chauvinism, but at the time, I was just there to do a job.
Amazing. What led you into this career?
It was never a dream. It was never an ambition. My father was into aviation. He had a private pilot's license. So whenever he went flying, when the family got dumped at the airfield.
Yeah, right.
And it was a nice airfield. They had a nice clubhouse with a swimming pool. And so the families could hang out. And when I was old enough, my dad insisted I got my private pilot's license. Being a teenager, I was more into boys. So, probably the worst student. But when I got my heart broken, I went back to see my instructor who was flying King Airs, flying executive aircraft. And that's when I thought, oh, I like this.
Cool. And what age were you then?
About 20, 21.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And at that stage, King Airs, like the Flying Doctor aircraft, they only needed one qualified pilot, and the second crew member could do the radio and the paperwork and would be called a pilot's assistant. But then the rules changed, so I could no longer be a pilot's assistant. So in order to gain the next qualification to going back to doing the same job, I had to become an instructor, which I managed to do one day before the rules changed. So I became an instructor to build up my experience and my hours, then managed to get a job as a first officer in a King Air.
And what was the role of your aircraft?
So the aircraft, with the instructor, he just flew executives wherever they wanted. When I got a job based at Gatwick, it was executive and air ambulance. So we flew anyone that could afford it. and anyone that had insurance that needed to be picked up and brought back to the UK. So the seats could be taken out and a stretcher could be put in. So it was a combination.
Amazing.
So yeah, I met some famous people. But what I learned from it is just everyone's just human. You know, money doesn't make a difference. Some people with money are arrogant, others are nice.
Yes, gotcha. That is true. And some people without money are arrogant and some people are not.
Absolutely. Yes. It taught me a lot about people.
Yeah. Interesting. So you talked about being in the UK. Is that where you were born?
Yeah. Yes, I was born in the UK and stayed there until 2005.
So after the King's Air?
King Air. Yeah.
What happened after that?
So I was made redundant, or what I now understand was a chauvinistic move, but then managed to get a part-time job on another air ambulance, which boosted my confidence, but that was part-time. And the rules had changed yet again. So I did some more studying to gain another license, the higher up license, to be able to move on and get another job. At that stage, the job I was offered was in Aberdeen, so as far north as you could get from London. So it was a job. So I went for it, and that was great. That was on a Dash 7. Here they fly the Dash 8. So Dash 7 has four engines. Brilliant aeroplane. Ah, makes my heart flutter. So we were flying oil rig workers up to the northern Shetland Isles, where they then got helicopters over to the oil rigs. The chief pilot up there, he was brilliant. The early oil workers hadn't seen a female pilot before and were extremely nervous. So whenever I flew with the chief pilot up there, he'd just walk down the back and sit down the back for most of the flight. So the guys got used to the fact I was just there to do a job.
Amazing. I think that's amazing. And then what else did you fly?
So after Aberdeen, because family and friends were down south in the UK, the company I was with had a base in Bristol. So I managed to get transferred from Aberdeen down to Bristol. They had the Dash 7s there for a while, but then phasing out the Dash 7s, they also had Dash 8s. So the same as they fly out of here.
Okay.
So moved on to the Dash 8, and that was scheduled flights. So it was a set timetable for the whole of the year. And so that was from Bristol to Newcastle, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Plymouth, or the Channel Islands. So every day of the week there was a set route. It was different every day.
Yeah. And how many female pilots did you come across in that first kind of time?
None.
But wow.
But it didn't register.
Okay.
There are lots of airlines, lots of aircraft.
Yep.
Once I was established in Bristol, another female came along who happened to be the ex-wife of my flying instructor.
Of course.
And then eventually there was a third. So yes, there were three of us. I don't know how many pilots, but 6 to 10 aircraft, well over 100.
Wow. Amazing. So, Susie, tell me, what does it feel like flying a plane?
What I loved was the feeling of every cell in your body doing something. You use your feet, your hands, your eyes, is it even your sense of smell. If there's an electrical smell, you become aware of a possible fire or someone smoking down the back. So every sense in your body, your brain is fixed on plan A to get from A to B, but you've also at every stage, you've got plan B and plan C and plan D. And as you go along, you change those, plan E, plan F. So at every stage, you're planning what you're going to do in the event of something. You're getting the weather at each stage as you're flying along, so you know if something happens now, what the weather's like at the nearest airport to get to. You're also getting the weather at the airport, your destination airport, so you can work out which runway you're going to land on. You're always monitoring the fuel. Do I have enough fuel to divert somewhere else? Keeping note of times. You've got duty times. If you've had to divert somewhere, do they have to get another crew member to come to wherever you've diverted to take the aircraft, or can I just maybe hold for a little longer? Am I going to run out of time? So your brain is going all the time. Your body is ready all the time. Monitoring everything about the engines. It's just that buzz, I suppose, of every cell in your body doing something.
That sounds incredible, but it, to me it sounds like your whole system is always on. Are there any times during the flight that you can actually relax, or is it constant?
Theoretically, yes. After I moved on from the Dash 8, I changed airlines to do European holiday flights. So when you're in the cruise, you're in the cruise for longer. So the pace is, you're flying faster, but the pace is slower because you've got maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 hours before your destination. And you're higher, so that if something happens, you've got longer to get down. So yes, it's in the cruise, you do have time to...
Okay.
To breathe.
And when you say in the cruise, is that sort of like what we would call automatic pilot?
The cruise is once you've reached your top of climb.
Yes.
Before your top of descent.
Uh-huh.
So the straight bit.
I see. When I have ever been in a cockpit, I notice that...
Flight deck,
sorry.
That's on it. That's right.
I noticed that because you're not actually looking straight out the window like you would be in a car, because they're up high. And I'm always thinking, how can pilots actually like enjoy this ride when they can't actually see much?
Yeah. We fly by the instruments. The instruments will tell you your altitude, whether you're climbing or descending, your speed, your position relative to various points there. Radio beacons. Nowadays it's more GPS and stuff like that.
Yes.
So you're always monitoring the instruments. Everyone's eye level is the same. You move your seat to adjust for the eye level. You have a fantastic view, be it colour outs or the scenery, but your aircraft position is based on the instruments.
Right, I see. Now, you were talking before about... plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D.
Yeah.
How far did you get to plans? Like, did you ever fly a aircraft that you had to go to different plans for various reasons?
Yes, it's mainly weather.
Yeah, right.
Other than that, I don't think there were really many other diversions, but so it's always in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and that brings me to another point. There are quite a few people who are terrified of flying, or even scared, or, you know, don't like flying because I guess you're up and you have no control. The first interview I did, Marie actually told me that she'd come to you did a workshop.
Oh, lovely. How is she?
Yeah. She's good. to kind of try and what? Tell people that...
It was this fear of flying, a discussion, to find out where people's fear lay.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, a bit of knowledge helps people understand what's going on, which helps with their fear. So if it's like you said, how do you know where you are? If I can explain how we navigate, then that understanding could help the person. A lot of people are fearful of turbulence. So there's some brilliant videos about designing aircraft, about the stress that they are designed to take, which is way beyond anything that the aircraft will ever encounter. So again, pointing out how strong the aircraft are, they may be fearful of an emergency engine failure. So explaining, we go into a simulator every 6 months and we practice what we'll do in the event of an engine failure. There are so many procedures to cover so many emergencies that to pilots, they're not an emergency, they're a procedure, which you've practiced, which you have in the forefront of your mind, right from lining up at the end of the runway before takeoff. You discuss emergency procedures. The very last thing you discuss is what happens in the event of ABC. So it's there in your mind. So again, it's plan A to take off, and plan B is what we'll do if the aircraft won't, if there's a problem.
Yes. Now, you've kind of told me what your favourite part was, and it was just the stimulation, your brain, your body, yes. Everything was on. Was that the favourite part of flying, or was that just?
I think a complex approach that needed complete focus. So far, I've had the same number of takeoffs as landings.
No, congratulations.
So landing at the end of a complex approach was thrilling.
Yeah,
just the complete focus right through to the that releasing your breath at the end once everything's off, once you're at your stand and the engines are off and everything's safe and done, that sort of end of the day of,
whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, what an achievement. Like, really, a huge achievement. It must have felt amazing at the end of the day.
I do miss that, being completely focused at every sense in your body, because you're listening out, you're checking, you're aware of that this isn't quite right, I'm going to do a go around, fly away from this approach, what I'm going to do then. So yes, just
And I guess you've got air traffic control talking to you as well, and you've got your co-pilot that you
must be, and you're listening to other traffic as well, so you've got to have a spatial awareness of where other people are, so that you can think, okay, I've been cleared to do this, but that aircraft has also been cleared, so do I double check? So it's not just listening and obeying, it's listening, checking, no, I can't do that because of some reason, or are you sure? So no. So yes, that's...
Yeah. And it would never be one of those times where you thought to yourself, oh, shall I ask this? You would always ask if you were unsure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They say there's no such thing as a stupid question.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
And with two crew aircraft, two pilots, one pilot does the physical flying and the other pilot does the radio and all the checks. So between you, you're checking each other.
Yeah.
They'll go through the checklist and ask, have you done this, have you done that, have you done the other, a set procedure. So you're always working as a team, and the cabin attendants, it's all a team.
Yes.
I loved the teamwork, that you've all got your part to play, you all know what everyone's doing, and together you get from A to B.
You're getting people from A to B. You're working. Yeah. That's awesome. And I had this question about, because you're sort of saying that everything's on, and I'm wondering whether however you function in the world when you were young, do you think that is important? Or
I think I just got there by learning how to study.
Okay.
And there's so much training. And I think maybe a lot of pilots have OCD. Because you have to be very precise. So that sort of personality is probably how people get on in flying.
Mm-hmm.
So my personality possibly grew into the job.
Yes, gotcha.
And as it turned out, it fitted my personality.
This is really interesting, actually. No, it did. Mm. It was good. I'm thinking about kids who are at school now or, you know, youth, people who are of an age of thinking, you know, being a pilot is something I'd quite like to do. What would you kind of recommend for them to look into or,
yeah? I think firstly at school it's being good at maths and physics. So you have to understand everything about the aircraft, aerodynamics, engines, every system, which a lot of it is physics. And you also need to be able to calculate quite quickly because you're checking your rate of descent to your destination versus the distance you got to go. So basic maths.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think with aviation, it's not a 9-to-5 job. So you've got to have a passion to be able to get up at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m. or do a night flight, get to bed when everyone else is getting up. So it's not so much a job as a passion.
It's a lifestyle job. Yes, because
certainly yes,
you'd also be staying in different places and hotels and in different countries, different time zones.
Yes. If
you're international. Yes.
I did medium haul and all the flights were there and back. So even if it was a 5-hour flight, it was hour on the ground, 5 hours back. But yes, there are times when you're on night stops, when you're in hotels. So looking to a future in the airlines, you have to be independent enough to be able to be away from home, to just get on with the job. As I say, it's more of a passion than a job. There's a lot of exams. Every 6 months you're in the simulator. You have training captains fly with you and monitor you on real flights. So you're always under scrutiny. It's a job where you're continually learning, so to be open to always learning.
So the actual initial training and the flight hours and everything would take how many years, do you think, to get that done?
It took me a few years to be able to be an instructor, then another few years before being able to get onto executive aircraft, then another few years to get onto the turboprop fleet, and then I think about 5 years before I managed to get onto a jet airline.
It's dedication, though, isn't it? It's dedication to continue. And even when you're flying and possibly earning a reasonable wage, you've still got to learn and continue learning and do your simulations and all that all the time.
Yes, and I think things are quite different now from when I did it. There are training courses where you can spend a year or two at the college learning about the written exams, doing the flying, and get into an airline after a couple of years.
So how many years in total did you fly planes, Susie?
About 20 years.
Amazing. And what in the end led you to your last flight?
9/11.
Right.
When the aircraft hit the World Trade Center, 9/11, I was pregnant. That the tragedy caused the airline business to change dramatically. A lot of people wouldn't fly. So the airline I was with, they closed the Bristol base, moved the aircraft to Gatwick, and I had a new baby.
Mm.
So I took time off. I managed to extend my maternity leave. I had to move house to where the aircraft was based to go back to work. Then after a few years, I realised you're made aware of the heightened alert system within the country. And so instead of being fully focused on flying, I was always thinking, oh, what about my baby?
Right.
Between us, my husband and I thought, we need to do something different. And that's when we decided to emigrate to New Zealand, a much safer country, and bring up our child in this beautiful country where children could be children and not always worried about threats.
So, but you do miss it sometimes.
Yes, I did hope to get back into flying. I got my New Zealand ATPL. I had to do exams and flight tests to convert my British license. And I'd made contact with Air New Zealand over the years. I used their simulator to get my license current and got my license in November 2008 when they'd started laying pilots off due to the recession. I managed to convert it to an Australian license. Couldn't get into Qantas, couldn't get into Jetstar. Everyone was laying people off. So that was that. At that stage, I'd become a single mom. New town, settling my daughter into school. I couldn't do a job that wasn't 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I miss it every day.
Oh.
The purpose and the full focus on achieving.
Mm. I always find that if I don't have a specific purpose during the day, it's always very weird for me. Like, I just feel unsettled, on edge, and I'll be like, what is wrong? Why can't I settle? And it's just because I don't have a specific purpose.
Yes, I just so love learning.
Yeah.
Being used to always learning. So I've been learning sort of psychology side of things, learning that it's okay to sit down and do nothing because you're not doing nothing. You're doing what your body needs. Having been so used to being on the go all the time to nothing, my developed love of learning has brought me to learning, how do I live life now?
What advice would you give someone, whether they're just starting out in the job market or they're a young person going, I had no idea what I want to do?
A job takes up a lot of your time. So try and find out what excites you, what makes you feel like you've had a sense of achievement, and then look into a career that would fit that. Because I think there's nothing like going home at the end of work thinking, yes, I enjoyed that.
Mm.
Yes, I achieved something. And being excited to go to work the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Think of who you are. Yeah.
Mm.
What makes you you? What makes you happy?
Nice. Is there anything else that you've got from your years of flying that is one of your most prized things that you really love?
My licenses and my logbooks. I'm proud to have them. They show everything I've done and the multitude of written exams, the nerves that I've been through to do those exams, and the nerves to do the flight test. Every flight test is written in that license. Again, it's emotional.
We must have a wee look through those. Let's have a cuppa.
Yeah.
Thanks, Susie. That was really awesome. I just feel like people are going to love hearing your experience as a pilot.
It's a fantastic job. You have the best office in the world with the best view in the world and a changing view, and it's different every day. Beautiful sunrises, beautiful sunsets, night sky, amazing to look at. That's a wonderful job.
So special. Thank you.
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.co.nz, for our contact details.